was the man coordinating all of that. He composed it. It's a jazz classic called Senor Blues. He's on piano, by the way. And it has become, it has been, in fact, a jazz standard for many years, because this tune was actually recorded in 1956. He returned to it and then added lyrics to it. And I'll select one of those singers who did this song so you could appreciate both sides of it, both the instrumental and the lyric. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and I want to ask a pretty personal question of you today. What is your political capital? What? What did she say? What is your political capital? Do you have any? And do you know what it is? Do you know what it's worth? The times are fraught with chaos and contention, pulling us psychologically in this direction and then that, and challenging us almost daily to react, to decide, to align, realign, not align at all with views and actions that are not our own. So how do we decide? How do we decide? We draw against or we draw on our political capital. Now, what is that? That is the political wisdom you acquire through experience, through application of hard work, through a great deal of losses, a few triumphs here and there. You get to learn how the political world works. And the first thing that goes out the window is your altruism. You see the world very differently from everybody else, because you become highly realistic. You're not in the world of fancy and pretense. You're clear about what is happening, why it is happening. You're clear about what is in the interests of people, what is not. You're clear about how you're supposed to behave in this world. You can't easily be had. Speaking of which, just this weekend, it was discovered, surprise, surprise, that several members of Congress who got to learn about this program that was about to be launched to protect small businesses from ruin and to give them a little buffer so that they can keep going while they reorganize themselves. A whole bunch of members of Congress took loans, and they opened about it. This immediately should constitute a good reason for ousting them from Congress. This is old time 1940s, 1950s criminal behavior, rotten political conduct. But there they are. These are the legislators of the land. But let me not digress. I'm asking about your political capital because most of us aren't aware that we have it, or we have any of it. And many of us who are aware we squander it nonetheless on useless individuals, on failing campaigns, on mediocrity. We know it's not going to amount to much to say, well, I'm supporting this person and I'm supporting that person. You start off from a negative position. They're not worth it. Not if you look closely. Not if you ask the right questions. Not even if you have a cursory understanding of their recent past as legislators, what they have accomplished and what they have not accomplished. But, you know, it's voting time and time counts. We have to step up to the plate and vote our person in. At least that's what we feel. I don't feel that way at all. So I try my very best, and I've tried for years, not to squander my political capital in as much as I have some. Are you squandering your political capital? Have you squandered your political capital? Have you refused to listen to your gut, your brain, the facts that you know well, but you still head down to vote? I'm not suggesting that people not vote. It was my choice in several elections not to vote, not to waste my political capital. I think we have to get to the point where we are comfortable with the idea that our vote is worth something, we are worth something, and it isn't showing up. What is showing up are people who want to further their career. They want in. They want to join a process that fundamentally is against the interests of the vast majority of people. That's what they want. They like being called senator this or assemblyman that. Because in their own lives, they're starved for recognition. And this is a way to get it. You play ball, you could get a little bit of recognition. And you feel good because you have a title. You're not doing a damn thing. You can't do a damn thing. You're just a cog in a big, corrupt wheel. Now, since I'm a very practical person, just the same, pragmatic, despite all of that, you still have to keep in mind that sometimes you may have to hold your nose and do what you got to do in the larger interest. Sometimes you have to do that. Or sometimes it feels as if you have to do that. But I have a very strange personality disorder. Well, people who know me know that I have many disorders. But I just can't bring myself to doing it. I can't settle for third and fourth rate. I can't support people who are not equipped to do the job that they're fighting each other for. I can't do it. I can't settle for inferior product when I myself have experienced superior product. I can't go for the average person running today when we have had the stark comparison with the Adam Clayton Powell. And he was not perfect, by the way. But in the ways that he needed to be perfect, as a representative of the people, a consistent and conscientious representative of the people, he was perfect. So I refuse to see all the other things because they're not important. When it came to the struggle, he was 100% there. That's fine with me. I could deal with all the other stuff. But it had been my experience and in my reading and my research that he was a consistent server, servant, and defender of the people. You're not wasting your money. You're not squandering your political capital with somebody like that. We don't have too many like that. We have other kinds. And to support them is to surrender your political capital, to squander it, to waste it. All right. I've said enough to give you an idea of where we are going today. I wonder if you've even asked yourself the question, what is my political capital? Am I using it well? How do I know? If I show up blindly every election day and vote, and then I leave the voting site feeling great, I have voted. You don't know what you've done. You lost your brain before you even went. This is a time that we have to return to these fundamental questions and insist for ourselves that we find the answer and then act accordingly. We are in very bad shape as a whole. But there are communities that are even in worse shape. I feel like I belong in one of those communities, one of those communities that is in not bad shape, but in worse shape. Because what afflicts us today is actually a compounding of the afflictions we have suffered through the years and have not been able to do much about. Why? That's a whole different question. But that is the reality. There are a million reasons why we haven't done this or why we haven't done that, why we haven't voted for this one, why we haven't voted for that one. The bottom line is that even when we vote, we, in many ways, are squandering our political capital. Should we continue down that road? Should we pretend that it's not really hurting us, and instead look to the good side of things, that this is America, and the way you prove your citizenship in America is you just vote. Get out there and vote. No. It's a good time to rethink all of this in the same way that we are rethinking things like policing, how our communities should be reorganized, how our whole system needs to be readjusted, reorganized to suit our purpose. It's a good time to think about these things. So we'll think about it today. I want to hear from you what you define as your political capital. How have you been using it, if you've been using it at all? What have you made up your mind to do, if you've made up your mind at all, to do anything different about your political capital? Is it worth fighting for? Is it worth protecting? Is it worth investing well? These are the questions I'm asking at 888-874-4888. I want to know about that political capital of yours, whether you even recognize that you have it. And are you prepared to do what you have to do to protect it, even if it causes disappointment in the short term, inconvenience in the short term? It's okay. But you know what you're doing. You're conscious. And you are making the right decision, because you have invested in your political capital. You have invested well. All right, let's take this break and come back to your analysis, your opinions, your reactions right after this. With it? What are you doing with it? How are you investing it? What do you think about it, as a matter of fact? How do you even respect it? Have you squandered it in the past? Are you going to repeat it? What will make you stop and say, it is not worth me investing my political capital in this endeavor or in that person, and feel perfectly comfortable with that decision? 888-874-4888. We start off with Moki from Connecticut.
Greetings, Eutrius.
Thank you. To you too.
And salutations, my professor.
I need a professor right now myself.
Well, you are your own professor as well as ours.
Oh, thank you.
Self-instruction is the most difficult process. so easy to be instructed by others. Our political capital, my political capital, well, it can take a few forms. Your vote, your body, as in the street, and your wallet.
But I don't want you to talk hypothetically. I want you to talk strictly personally today. What is your personal political capital?
Well, starting with who I would vote for, I looked around for a peace candidate, and the only peace candidate in the process was Tulsi Gabbard, and she was very largely a disappointment. So I'm going to vote my conscience, which is what I did in 2016, meaning I'm going to look around for I'm just going to do a write-in for a peace candidate. All right, so what about the other things? Your body in the street. That's not, the big demonstrations, Utrice, are not costing the system anything. They're looking on and laughing, and of course they're using it as an excuse to crack down harder with the militant police. So when I say my wallet is my political clout, my leverage, I'm getting back to something that I've harped on, and that is the 16th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution of the United States. I'm sorry, the 16th Amendment of the Constitution. I refer again to Aaron Russo, interviews the ex-commissioner of the IRS. The sum of that interview is that the IRS proclaimed themselves as being a government unto themselves. That the law.
But you're offering me a critique. You're offering a critique. You're not offering an explanation of your political capital. For example, in the case of Tulsi Gabbard, I don't think you could deny that I took you on that issue quite a bit. And I said she was wasting time.
And therefore, my
drop out of the race.
Yes. And supports Biden. So that so much for that political currency of mine. So meaning, until you get back to paper ballots counted by college students and retirees for $15 an hour, which is what they do in Canada, until you do that, you have a system. I mean, your vote doesn't count. It can be flipped at any time. So forget that. I have no political currency invested in voting. So back to my wallet. People, we're living in a bizarro world. You know what I'm saying? Everything is backwards, inside out, and upside down. Bezos is not paying a dime in taxes. He's the one who should be paying all the taxes. If I can refer back to President Eisenhower, if Bezos was making his fortune in that time, 90% would be appropriated for the common good, for the commonwealth. So when I say 16th Amendment, I say that your wages and your labor are not to be taxed. Capital gains are to be taxed.
But you're off again. I'm looking for you to stay on course and share with us what you define as your political capital and how will you use it.
Boycott, divest and sanction, national strike, and a tax, let's just say revolt. Let's just call it that, tax revolt. If we were to understand the 16th Amendment correctly, and it was tried in court and reaffirmed, that people making capital gains, they're responsible for supporting the infrastructure. That my capital is my body, my labor, and my wages. And they're not supposed to be taxed. So when I talk about national strike, that is just kind of a lead in to, let's think of it as defunding a corrupt government. People have locked into defunding the police and what that entails. So if your government is corrupt and violent, let's defund them, if you want to think of it in those terms.
No, I don't want you to put any suggestions out there. I want you just to stay close, in fact, right on top of the issue at hand. Talk to us about your political capital and how you spend it.
Well, it's not by voting. And I don't feel that my time is well spent in the street. As I said, they're mocking us.
Yes, but you're telling us what you don't feel. What I'm asking you to affirm what you've been doing or what you intend to do. Don't tell us what you won't do.
I have not been best in the stock market. If I did, it would only be in ethical companies. So I would if I was an investor and a shareholder, that would be some way of leverage. But I'm not. So I just try not to buy goods and services that are attached to racist and fascist operating principles. So that's when, you know, how I spend my money from day to day.
Okay, thank you. You got us started today. Thanks a lot.
Tax revolt.
Tax revolt. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice. I want to take up your question, and I'm telling you what I'm going to do. And what I am doing.
Number one, my
political capital has to do with the book I wrote, Playing the Game, and I know some people have read it. But the current thing that I'm doing right now, I've decided to go on YouTube, and I have a program called Brother David from Brooklyn Speaks. So that's my political capital. I'm spending it talking to people, talking the truth, and I'm thinking that that will have a good influence because I can talk about the things that you're not going to hear on corporate media and get out some ideas that people are not thinking about. And one of the things that has driven me to that point is that I'm talking to people, and all they can say is, we got to get rid of Trump. That's it. No one even talks about what they want or what they need and what the people need and want. They're just saying, you got to get rid of Trump, and they're going along with the better of two evils, and I'm not doing that, and I'm talking on YouTube, and that is my political capital.
Okay. I saw an edition of it, and I can only surmise that in no time at all, you will be a household name.
Thank you. Thank you, because I tell the truth, and I don't have to lie like those slugs that are on corporate media. Here they are making huge salaries, and they sound totally ignorant. So David from Brooklyn tells the truth, and I'm getting out ideas about what is good for me and other people, and you're never going to hear that on corporate media. So every week I'm going to have a post, and I think people will like what I have to say. That is my political capital.
Good luck with it. Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Eutrice.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Me and my thumbs, we're here.
And your famous thumbs.
Me and my famous thumbs, well developed now. Speaking about political capital, my thing has always been local. I'm a firm believer in all politics being local. I try to work within District 27, District 28, try to work with the assemblymen, try to find some people who can do something for my immediate vicinity and my immediate community. I think that's where it starts. What we don't have is community. We don't have the concept or understanding of what a community is and what real politics is about. which is basically just the allocation of funds for the betterment of the general community. If you don't have a community, if you don't have any background or any culture, you can't, you don't have any political capital because you're just making a lot of noise and your focus isn't anywhere. So I try to focus on local things, getting some garbage cans in the streets, getting street lights on, getting, you know, getting roads repaired, getting businesses back open now with this COVID-19 pandemic. A lot of small businesses, local hardware stores, local pharmacies, local establishments on Jamaica Avenue have closed and possibly won't come back. And we've been looking into trying to get funding, trying to get government funding from the state specifically, because Cuomo seems to be affable. I don't think the federal government is going to be in that ballpark for a while, but especially with the state, with Cuomo, with de Blasio, appealing to them through the city council. Because I think all politics are local. If you can't control your immediate environment, then you have no hope in influencing or controlling the national scale in the system as it is. Because, to be totally honest with you, the system is screwed, but it's all we got. And until people really make a determinant decision to destroy the system, you got to work with what you got.
How do you do that?
Well, like I said, you know, appealing to local politicians, finding out the ones that represent what I personally feel are the needs in the community, and supporting them, knocking on doors, doing the grunt work, making the phone calls, talking to people, handing out flyers. That's you know, we live in a internet, Facebook, YouTube world, but there's real political grunt work that needs to be done, and that's what's missing. That's what develops the community. That's what builds the character. Even getting the broom and going on 93rd Avenue and sweeping up, that develops relationships. That gets you talking to people. That gets your ideas out there. Anybody can sit in front of a computer screen or talking to a YouTube camera, but you got to be out there. You got to be part of the community. That's when people see your sincerity, and that's when you start to make, I feel, an impact.
Where do you think this would lead? Where is it going?
Well, I mean, hopefully, you know, I can't predict the future. Hopefully, you know, all I can do is go by the past. Fannie Lou Hamer, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, all of these people were grassroots people that got dirty, that got involved, and something came of it. You know, we have some victories, even though they are fleeting and far between, but there are some victories. And we are doing better than we were 50 or 60 years ago, and you got to keep the faith. I mean, it's not being esoteric. It's just, if there is no light, then what's the point? I'd rather, you know, you're dying to live or you're living to die. You can't be totally cynical and totally hopeless.
I agree with that. Although, I got to tell you, I just couldn't bring myself to supporting the people who were presented to us as the selected candidates. What I instead decided to do was my own projects.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought a great deal of satisfaction and a sense of accomplishment and a sense of community, which is what I've been saying for years is our only real salvation. We have to rebuild and defend our communities. And that, if we devote ourselves to that one purpose, it's going to be a hard struggle, of course. But in the end, you see bits and pieces of how it's working and how people catch on. And hopefully it grows. But you gotta not wait for somebody to start the big project. It's not going to happen.
Well, there is no big project. It's all a cumulative effort. Like I said, all politics is local. You'll have more influence if you can repair the pothole that's on 176th Street. Or you can get a garbage can on 93rd Avenue, or you can get a local store to reopen after this pandemic is hopefully curve is flattened, whatever you want to call it, however you want to look at it. These are the things that people, these are the effects of politics. These are the local things that people see. When you're trying to tackle these huge nationwide, worldwide things, and you get frustrated because it doesn't work like that. This system may be flawed, but there's a way into it. And there's rules to a game. You got to play by the rules. Even if the game is flawed, you still got to play by the rules. And hopefully, if enough people resist the system, eventually it'll break.
All right. Well, thank you. I think you are onto something there. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Gwen from New York, you're on the air. What is your political capital that you are keenly aware of and that you use very strategically?
Hi, Therese.
Hi.
I'm going to use my political capital as I've been using it. First, I'll continue. Since I've run for office and I know a lot about politicians locally and their downfalls they've had and how they've turned a lot on the community, I will continue to put that out there as giving people sources of further information.
About that experience running for office?
Well,
I've
learned a lot from running for political office, and I'm going to run one more time in 2021. So I guess I need a lot of recognition. So, but the real reason why I have run for office and why I do run is because locally zoning issues are really important, and these zoning issues go through the city council here, and it's because of these zoning issues, in my opinion, that we've had this huge onslaught of gentrification and homelessness in New York. That's one of the things. And so I think that even though most people probably wouldn't find zoning a sexy issue, it's not. It's boring. But it is, so at least in New York City, it's so important. It could mean life or death for the people that live here. And I've seen people in our entire community displaced over gigantic box stores, 11 businesses put out of business through eminent domain to accommodate box stores. I've seen, including the school that I saved, almost went down to create luxury housing. I've seen more. Well, you know, there's about 85,000 people now that are homeless. And it was at the hands of our politicians. It's at the hands of our politicians. They deliver it. As a matter of fact, one of the women that I ran against is now has her mindset on the Bronx. And why will she get help? She'll get help because she did a wonderful job gentrifying East Harlem. She delivered to Mayor Bloomberg exactly what he wanted. In return, he gave her $86 million to run her new political PAC. So even when you don't get in, you know, you get a platform to speak about issues truthfully. When you get to be on debates, you get to actually address those issues, and they're very uncomfortable for the people that are in office right now. I hope to make it to office next time. It's very, very hard because one of the things that was said today was about paper ballots. Everyone in this audience needs to know that every single election can easily be stolen. It's not a big deal. It happens all of the time. It happens more that they are stolen than they are not. So everyone should get that. And the other thing that I intend to do is to stay on with social media and continue posting my personal opinions about local politics. I think that local politics is probably actually more important than even the president. It matters who's in office at the presidential level, but local politics, you can't beat it. This is how we establish where you're.
How did you accrue any appreciable amount of political capital?
It started as activism, and it just really started at the like very local level. I went on rent strike when I came to New York with my block, and that ended up as a 7-year battle in landlord tenant court. And from that point, I became a housing activist. And then they came to tear down our beautiful public school, and I said, "You're not doing it." And I stood in front of the bulldozer, and I created the Coalition to Save PS 109, which I I did save PS109 with a group of four other people, then went on to land market, but I lost at the level of keeping it as a public school. My vision was to keep it as a public school for the people that live in this poor district, because that school was designed 100 years ago with the intention that through education, there would be a way out of poverty. That's exactly what the head of the Board of Education said at the time when this gorgeous building was being placed in this poor neighborhood. So that was my intention. But the woman that I lost the election to, Melissa Mark Viverito, turned it into apartments for so-called artists that are good friends of hers. And we lose these buildings for these ridiculous ideas. And they are very dangerous because the first thing that comes into a community to gentrify is always these so-called artist groups. That's the first piece of the tile that goes down. And then across the street from there, as soon as that happened, two luxury buildings went up right after that. And then the push to go on and start taking the property around the New York City housing projects. Now, I got very, very involved in that. That's called infill. So I fought the infill. But one of the biggest fights I had was the upzone of 125th Street. And that is where things really, really got terrible. As soon as they got that upzone, they were able to remove easily thousands of people that live in Harlem and start building luxury high-rises at an incredible rate. And although we lost that battle, and we did lose that battle, one good thing came out of it. I met my husband, Peter. And Peter and I got married, and I got involved. Peter and I were continued to be activists. His brother was killed by a policeman in 1962, shot in the back of the head. So we were always involved in Harlem issues, but then we went on to get involved in the Black Lives Matter. We were both at Occupy Wall Street. So these are some of the things where I've accrued political capital, but most of how I get, my information is you have to go to local meetings. You have to go to the community board meetings. You have to do a lot of different things to get your information. But these are really important pieces of information because, I didn't believe my mom when she told me that all politics is local when I was 27. I thought she was full of baloney. And then when I almost lost my apartment, I actually did end up losing my apartment, I realized, holy crap, it matters. Because, when I lost my apartment on 99th Street, Governor Cuomo, the first one, was the governor. And up to that point, when he was the governor, I was winning, winning, winning. But when Governor Pataki came in office, all of the judges in New York City Housing Court were changed to conservative judges. And then I lost and I lost and I lost. So it does matter who's in office. And I don't think we can be too cynical about that, even though I got example this morning, I got from our local assembly person, he's running. When I saw everyone that endorsed him, I thought, well, this is exactly why I would never vote for you. But these people stay in for years and years and years. And it was like a list of people that gentrified East Harlem. He's got Inez Dickens on there, and he's got Charlie Rangel. And it's like, well, okay, these are all the people that basically, sold us out and sold the people who live here out. And these are the people you have endorsing you. And you can't move this guy out of the way. He'll be in office until he's dead. And that's really a shame because it really should be imposed in the system that, for example, every person in Congress can only serve three terms. There's no new blood in Congress because, yes, you have to vote for them every 2 years, but it's so incredibly hard to get them out. And I'm not against old people. My parents are very old, and I admire them, but I'm not sure if I want my dad, some of these people are now in their 80s, and I'm not sure that they should be at the helm. We need to let fresh blood in.
Well, you sound like you have quite a bit of capital. You earned it the hard way, and therefore you won't squander it. You would use it judiciously.
No way.
Thanks for calling in and contributing. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks very much.
Good.
I hope.
So how would you define your political capital? What is it? How did you get it?
Yeah, I don't think that exists. I don't think it ever existed for a long, long time. When they needed us, it existed. because we were important to the system.
Yes, but talk about it from a personal point of view today. What is your personal political capital? How did you get it? If you have it.
Like I said, it's adapting to whatever comes my way and being resilient to, to whatever happens. I mean, if there's a hurricane coming and it says mandatory evacuation, you got to be ready to go, right? So you got to be ready to deal with whatever comes your way. Whether you're concentrating on the government, which is a, just a facade there, that the system is run by money, big business, and rich people. And if you're not one of them, then you're just trying to survive, basically. So you have to be resilient and adaptable and be ready for anything. And that's my political capital, I guess, then, that I'm staying on top of things, because you have to think out of the box and see what's really going on, because there's a lot of manipulation going on, and it's very hard to see. There's subtle...
Could you give us an example of how you have used your political capital to good advantage?
It's hard to get into, like, a very short time. You know, just trying to stay within the laws and use your intelligence to deal with a corrupt system the best way you can without breaking any laws. And there's avenues to use where you can, like, get around things if you're smart. So, this is, there's a lot of different things involved in that. But, I don't want to get too intricate with things, so... I guess I was just going to comment on something, that there's no political clout anymore. So, it's really like a dead issue now. It's like a microcosm of Detroit. What happened to Detroit is starting to happen to the rest of the United States and the rest of the world. Machines take over.
We get replaced. What happened to the rest of the United States?
I'm lucky because I'm 65, so I don't have to work anymore, so I can get Social Security. But it's funny how everybody over 65 is dying now of this virus. So put two and two together, and you get the answer. So what was it?
No, I was asking, how could you explain something that you yourself experienced as a direct outgrowth of your using your political capital wisely.
Okay, my father died. He was taking care of my mom. She has a bipolar problem, so she had to be on medication. I try to change her diet. She just doesn't do it. You can't force a person. You can lead a horse to water. You can't make them drink. So I did the best I could with her. But I got her into an A1 nursing home by using the system. You got to get an elder care lawyer. That's the key word. When you have an older person that's difficult and you're doing the best you can and you got to go to work and it's very difficult, elder care lawyer saved the day. And they tell you everything you got to do to help that person. So I used the system that way, and it helped my mom, who lived till 94, and she wasn't uncomfortable for her last 7 years. She was taken care of very well, and it allowed me to do the work I had to do, to pay rent and to do everything I had to do. So you have to use the system without crying and complaining, and you do the best you can, and you just put your nose to the ground, and you got to get things done. If you got to drive from New York to Florida, get your stuff, take it here, put it there, go down on the plane, two empty suitcases, get your mom ready, bring her down and get her on a plane somehow. Oh, she can't be in a wheelchair. You got to put her in a seat. That's the way it has to be. Well, how can... But you do it, and you got to do it, and then you get to the airport, and you get the van, and you get it to her here, and now she's in a new nursing home, and they're going to take care of her, too. And everybody takes care of things like, and that's the way you got to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you persevered, and you were able to extend her life all that time to her mid-90s. That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, ice cream was her favorite thing every day. So you can imagine, you know, I like ice cream too, but ice cream was her best thing.
You learned the system quite well, and you applied what you learned and to good advantage. Thanks for calling in. That brings us to the end of our program today. I hope you take something from today, which is develop a consciousness about your political capital, just as you are. You're not running for office or anything like that, which is fine. But be aware of the value you have as a political person. And use your understanding of a political system. Use your understanding to good advantage. But don't settle. Don't throw away your political capital on people or on projects that are not worth it. Think very carefully and safeguard your political capital. That's all I wanted to say to you today. And we got enough indications that people are already on that track and seeing, you know, seeing how things are working and seeing themselves in the middle of all of that, being able to analyze what the system is all about. That's great. I think you've done a great job. So we'll see each other tomorrow. Thank you so much for today. Bye-bye.